Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. I sat down with an old friend of mine from the contemporary jazz days, Denny Giosa, who's had a number of hits on the smooth jazz charts. We started out talking about his background and how he went to GIT in Hollywood and studied under Frank Gambale. We've worked together on several songs for different albums. So here he starts out with growing up in Indiana.
I started playing actually when I was 7 years old. Dad had an old guitar laying around the house, and I picked it up, and I've not put it down since. So it's a true love with the instrument. I moved to L.A., went to GIT, out there at the Guitar Institute. I went in 84. I studied with Frank Gambale, was my private instructor, so that was a pretty great experience right there, you know. I guess it was about 87 I decided to make the move to Nashville and to be a little closer to my family in Indiana, so I moved down here and kind of carved out a little niche for myself in the jazz world, and it's kind of crazy to come from L.A. to Nashville, and then I get a record deal in New York. Here I am in Nashville, you know, and it's country music everywhere, and a guy moves into an office next to my studio that did jazz radio promotion, and he heard me, and the rest is history, you know. He got me the deal up there, and so it all went pretty smoothly for us. I just love soundscapes and cinematic type things. In fact, I'm working on something right now for someone, and he heard what I was doing and said, I think I can get you a record deal in this. There's this format, and he started telling me about it. Of course, it wasn't called smooth jazz then. I mean, I got into it because I was, you know, I heard Spyro Gyra and Rick Nowher doing the Captain Fingers thing and Carlton. That's the stuff that drew me in, you know. And still in Nashville doing it. I've got 7 records out now and working on a new one. Should be out in the spring. The last one, as you know, was On the Edge, is what it's called, and it was a kind of a more Satriani, Jeff Beck kind of thing. Now, this one's going to be a Latin record, and so we've got some brass and a lot of drums and percussion on it. It's a pretty screaming record. What I find when I go out and do live shows, you know, the people do enjoy the edgier music. When I kick in and really take off, they're on their feet. So it's a shame that they smoothed it out so much that it became background elevator type music. I can only do so much, and I have thrown my arms up in regard to trying to be the booking agent too, and had a couple of not so favorable experiences with some booking situations, and so I'm looking for somebody new. I'd love to get out and do more touring, you know, and I'd love to take this music to Europe. I really think, you know, they're a little more open to the edgier, more creative, not so programmed sounding music.
Being a fellow gearhead like myself, he's got his own recording studio at his house. So I wanted to see what kind of equipment he had, what he was using. I know everybody's moved out of analog tape to digital recording and computers. So he gives me a rundown of all his equipment.
I've got a 72-input Neotech analog console, and I absolutely love that board. It's been very good to me, and I do record to digital, you know, to the computer. I had a Studer 2-inch until about 5-6 years ago, and I decided that it was so expensive to keep and maintain, you know, I just thought it wasn't worth it. So I started mixing the analog console with the digital recording, and it really is a wonderful combination. I also mix records for other people often, and they just can't figure out how I get such a huge sound out of my studio. The board does help. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing as far as production goes. And guitar-wise, you know, I'm pretty much a Paul Reed Smith guy, using Mesa Boogie amps, and I've got a little boutique amp called a VVT. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. They're out of Maryland. Jim Hill, and he makes a great little amp. Paul just sent me an amp. It's absolutely wonderful. Paul called me on Christmas Eve, and he goes, you got some big bragging rights, buddy. I said, how's that? He says, well, he said, that amp that you were talking about that you heard, I heard him play with Santana in October on YouTube at a benefit. And when I saw Paul here in November, I said, what were you playing through? And he just kind of looked at me and got that grin on his face, you know, and he built 2 of these amps. He said, you're getting serial number 1 and Carlos is getting number 2. So I've got the amp here and it sounds pretty spectacular, I will tell you. He doesn't know if he's going to go into production with it, but I've got the prototype is sitting in my studio. I will tell you this, Brian, I've never seen anybody be as passionate about what they do as this guy. Close to 60, if he's not 60, I don't know if he's got to be real close to it. But he still is like a kid when it comes to building something and exploring how to make the guitar better. You know, without doing tricks and gimmicks, it's all really science how he approaches it, you know. It's pretty cool. I mean, he was here in town a couple of years ago, and we were at a restaurant for a party, and he had five nuts in his hand, you know, and he's like, come here, and he's clanging them on the counter, going, hey, this is what Gibson uses, this is what Fender uses, and then this is what we're using, and it just, like, sparkled. It just cut like a knife, you know. All those things make a difference. He listens to everything.
So I want to find out what Denny has on the horizons, what projects he's working on, and I found out he actually is a big wine connoisseur. And delving into that marketplace kind of comes full circle to his smooth jazz guitar playing.
I'm hoping to dive into a blues rock record late this year, you know, and maybe have that out the following spring. I've got some special guests that want to be on it that are going to be really cool. Our business has changed so much, you know, in every way. I've got my own label called Simon Canvas Records, and that's the plan as of now. I don't know. I might shop it. You know, I could use the help. It's very hard to try to wear all these hats. That's why it takes so long to get a record done. I don't see any need for the hard distribution anymore. That just doesn't seem like it's worth it. I think it's better to have the control. There are a couple cuts on this record that Smooth Jazz Radio, I think, would play. You know, XM and Sirius, they play me a lot already, so I'm hoping that they'll pick up on a couple of cuts off this record. I still sell CDs live. I'm lucky. I will tell you, I'm in my third pressing of my sixth record, Dreams Like This. It's still selling. It's all on Amazon and CD Baby, you know, and then when I go out and play live. So I'm still moving copies. And that record's 5 years old almost. I'm working on something right now that it's a pitch. It's not a firm deal. I'm pretty happy with it. Kind of a Hans Zimmer feeling thing, you know, and that's really, if I could stop and just do anything, that's probably where I would love to be every day, doing the soundscapes like that. I just really love putting all the pieces together, you know. You know, like Spyro Gyra and the stuff that was happening when we were teenagers that got us interested. Jeff Beck and Rittenhour and that kind of music where creativity was actually allowed. Real players, not computers playing the drums. I call it the smooth jazz shuffle. You heard the same feel on every single song. The melodies were getting old because they didn't want you to play past the 10th fret. If you played a note up there, it was rock, and they didn't want that. I guess I'm an optimist about it. I keep hoping it's going to rebuild itself, you know. But in the meantime, I'm not going to keep hanging there. That's why I'm doing these other records. That On the Edge was really a step out of the box for me as far as playing a lot of notes and using distortion. It's nice you can go out and do it as a trio, and it's a pretty huge sound. So we went out and did some shows, and again, wanted to do more, but putting it all together, it was like, oh, you want us to drive to Philly to play? That's great. Yeah, we got $150. Yeah, that is. And just go, now stay home. Thanks. You know, I dabble in the wine business as well, and I know quite a bit about wine. That's my hobby. I'm trying to tie in and take the music to the wineries, you know, and being in the wine business, I've met some of the winemakers, right? And they, when they meet me, they go, wait a minute, are you the guitarist? It's, yeah, well, I'm a big fan of yours. It's kind of going around the barn to meet them, I guess, you know, but it has worked in my favor. I make wine, but I'm not going to try to jump into that, you know. I would like to just create my label and have somebody else just source the juice, get it out there. So I'm kind of working on that right now.
It's such a great pleasure to talk to Denny. He's such a nice guy, and we have so much in common being producers, engineers, guitarists in this marketplace that's ever-changing and ever-developing. So here he is from his album On the Edge, Redemption.
Hi, this is Denny Giosa, and you're listening to Guitar Tracks on WFIT, the best instrumental music on the Space Coast.
That's my man, Denny Giosa. These last two tracks, Hipster and Chrome Dome, along with myself from my album Smooth Jazz Cafe, which has been re-released this year and will be out in March.